If you've been looking for a newer certified Toyota, come be part of the team. With inventory arriving daily, we'll help you find a vehicle that works for your lifestyle and budget. We'll continue to ensure that your next buying experience is as safe and efficient as possible. Our service center is open with easy online scheduling and a quick clean process to get you back on the road safely. Head to teamtoyota.net and be safe, be strong, be a team. Hey folks, welcome to the Phillies Talk podcast presented by Team Toyota. I'm Corey Simon and he's Jim Salisbury. And Jim, Bryce Harper kicked off his what he hopes is a big award season by winning NL Outstanding Player. It was announced Thursday night. I don't think too many people are familiar with this award. Kind of take us through this award and who did the voting?
Well, it's the Players' Choice Awards. They were founded in 1992 by the Players Association. And the reason these awards are significant and prestigious is because they are voted on by the players themselves. They vote, a winner is selected a winner by his peers. And I think that has great meaning almost in any profession, in professional sports, especially so. Guys in opposing clubhouses, are sitting there contemplating who best players, pitchers are in various leagues and in the respective leagues. And Bryce Harper comes out on top in the NL. So it's a really good honor for Bryce Harper. And it could be the precursor to more down the road. He remains a lead candidate, definitely a top candidate, one or two or three or four guys. Really, you could make a case for 10 guys to win the NL MVP. I really believe that, but I think most people are kind of focused on the top three or four. So he remains a strong candidate to win his second NL MVP later on in November. On November 18th, that'll be announced. And he obviously won the NL MVP in 2015 with Washington, and he won the Players' Choice Award as the top NL player that year as well. So maybe a little harbinger of things to come.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Well, aside from NL Outstanding Player, there's a lot of other awards that Bryce Harper's up for, and there's some that he's already won.
That's right, Corey. The Hank Aaron Award is going to be awarded here during the World Series. That's for the Major League Baseball player who's considered the top offensive performer in the game. And I would think you'll see, Ohtani, who ended up being the Player of the Year in the Players' Choice Awards, Guerrero, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Harper, Soto, Juan Soto. You'll see those types be finalists or all be under consideration for that Hank Aaron Award. And Harper has already won the Stan Musial Award. That is given by a university in St. Louis to a player who kind of exudes above and beyond level sportsmanship. And I think we all remember back in May, or earlier this season, Harper took a 97-mile-an-hour fastball in the face in St. Louis. And then you talk about sportsmanship. That could have not only ended his season, it could have ended his life. Thank goodness he walked away from it virtually unscathed. He actually suffered a wrist injury when the ball ricocheted off his cheekbone and hit him in the wrist. But, the young pitcher, Genesis Cabrera, felt awful about it. He wasn't trying to throw at him. It just got away from him, this angry fastball got away from him and hit Harper in the face. The next day, Harper called him on the phone and, talked to him and said he understood and this was baseball and that happens. That really diffused a potential incendiary situation. So good on Harper for doing that. And he's been recognized with that Stan Musial Award in St. Louis. So though a small award, I think it's significant because what it represents. It represents sportsmanship, and it represents really a key moment in Bryce Harper's season. That moment could have ended his season or even worse. And he came back from that and played every game in the second half, went on a tear, and now is a strong candidate for the MVP award. And then when I think of the Hank Aaron Award and I think of the Stan Musial Award, those are two players. You know, when we talk about the greatest players ever, we talk about Barry Bonds, talk about Willie Mays, obviously Babe Ruth. Musial, go back and look at the years that Musial and the careers that Musial and Aaron, Hank Aaron had. They should be in the discussion. Any discussion you have about the greatest player ever, and I don't think there's any way to really determine who is. I mean, you can put Mike Trout on that list. But Musial and Aaron absolutely deserve to be in the conversation. Go back and look at their careers. Absolutely amazing. So to win awards or even be considered for awards with the names of those men attached to them, I think it's pretty special.
It is. And I mean, if you think back to that period of time when Harper got hit in the face, that was just one of so many nagging injuries he was dealing with around that time. In fact, the Phillies' first 75 games, he missed 20 of them, 20 of their first 75 games because of, you know, the hit by pitch in the face or the back, the shoulder, the wrist, the knee, the ankle. There's just so many little things Bryce Harper dealt with before the All-Star break. Right. A lot of things he was probably feeling after the All-Star break as well, but he was on the field every single day. And that's another reason why he should solidly be in that, you know, MVP conversation to really win it. I'm looking at the history of the NL Outstanding Player Award just to kind of gauge whether the MVP typically is the guy who wins it. Last year, Freddie Freeman got both awards. The year before, Anthony Rendon was the NL Outstanding Player, a year he did not win NL MVP. And Christian Yelich also won it the year Cody Bellinger won MVP. So it's not always a precursor. But, I mean, when you look at the field, it's pretty much the way that we've been looking at the last few weeks and months. You know, Harper, Juan Soto, Fernando Tatis, guys like that. But Harper just, I mean, Harper has better numbers than Tatis. He played in higher pressure situations than Soto the second half. And I know that we both value that.
I absolutely do. You know, there is, to me, a semantics element to, you know, the Hank Aaron Award, you know, the outstanding offensive player in the major leagues, right? Is that what it is? Hank Aaron Award?
Yes. And the best offensive performer in each league. Yeah.
Best offensive performer in each league. You know, with the Players' Choice Award, outstanding National League player, outstanding American League player, you know, player of the year. And then, to me, there's nuance in when you talk about an MVP, a most valuable player. And the nuance is in that word valuable. You know, this game is played to win championships. And I think there's great value in the player that vaults his team into contention and helps his team stay into contention. I think there's great value in as an evaluation tool for a voter. When a player plays in those situations, plays in a contending situation, as you said, pressure situations. And I personally believe all that should be weighed into the vote. Harper kept his team right there. I mean, it was pretty much a one-man show, you know, for a couple months after Rhys Hoskins went down. I've always taken that into consideration. I don't necessarily feel like guys who put up great numbers and didn't play on contending teams or didn't vault their team into contending status, I don't think they should necessarily be punished. But I think the people who put up those numbers in pressure situations and help their teams contend for the very thing these leagues exist around or exist for, the very goal of these leagues, championships, I think that should carry a little extra weight. So, you know, Harper, to me, did all that.
Jim, the World Series is entering game three tonight. We sit down to record this on Friday morning. Game three is tonight in Atlanta. It was pretty funny. I saw this map came out the other day showing who each state in the USA was rooting for. And the only two states that were rooting for the Astros were Houston and Delaware. So it was surprising. It was surprising to me that even in Pennsylvania, they were going Braves. That just shows how much people still hate the Astros. And even in PA, you had the state of PA going Braves.
Why are they in Delaware? Is it something to do with tax-free shopping, perhaps? I wonder why. I'll have to try to figure that out.
Well, this Phillies-Braves rivalry, I mean, I guess it hasn't been you know, it hasn't been a super intense rivalry, I guess, just because the Braves have been so much better than the Phillies the last couple of years, although they were still in it going into the final week here. But the Braves just being three wins away from the World Series, claiming their first World Series since the 90s. I mean, that's just crazy given where that team was at the trade deadline, where they were at the All-Star break, you know, even where they were in the first week of August and where they are now.
Yeah, and there's a lot there. It shows you, you know, there's a lot of ways to win a division title and get into the postseason, but you know, one of them is to have a good team, hang around, get hot in the second half. The Braves certainly hung around. They certainly got hot enough in the second half, but a big factor in their rise to the championship was, you know, the people under them didn't rise up and take it, the Mets and the Phillies. But also, to me, the key element in the Braves' run to the fourth straight NL East title and getting to the postseason and now getting hot, great leadership in the dugout with the manager, Snitker, Ron Washington, Rick Kranitz, that Walt Weiss, tremendous coaching staff, keeps everybody, keeps that ship kind of on a straight path through rugged waters, you might want to say. So great leadership there, and it extends to the clubhouse with Freddie Freeman. And it extends right to the front office with Alec Anthopoulos, who should be the executive of the year. I mean, he lost basically his entire outfield, and there were studs, you know, Acuna, Ozuna. And what did he do? He went out and remade that outfield on the fly. He had four outfielders in trades. All have been great contributors. He did some work in that bullpen. And so just the way Alex Anthopoulos rebuilt that team, sent that message to that clubhouse that, yeah, we're kind of hovering around 500, but I believe in you guys. I know we've had some injuries, but I believe in what we have left here. I'm going to go out and augment this thing. We're not going to let this season die on the vine. And I think that fuels the clubhouse. You know, they still had superstars like Freeman and Albies played really well. They got Darnold back from the injured list. And, oh, by the way, young third baseman Austin Riley has a banner second half, plays himself into MVP considerations. Kind of like the perfect positive storm, you know what I mean? Everything came together. Excellent leadership, excellent performance. They obviously sat on the Phillies in the final week of the season when the Phillies came down there two games back, knocked them out. So hats off to the Atlanta Braves. You know, as they move to Atlanta for game three, they're going to be a tough team to beat. They have won 10 of their last 11 games at home. So I really think game three is always an important game in any series. It'll be an important game on Friday night with Ian Anderson and Luis Garcia, two rookies pitching in that game.
Yeah, Alex Anthopoulos' trade deadline in 2021, you know, it should be a lesson to any front office executive who has a team in that position where they're kind of in, kind of out, have some holes, because he filled them without giving up anything. You know, the Braves got Eddie Rosario for a 35-year-old Pablo Sandoval in what was pretty much just a salary dump on Cleveland's end. Eddie Rosario comes to Atlanta, has a 903 OPS in the regular season, then hits 560 with 9 RBIs in the NLCS and is the NLCS MVP. That's a guy you acquired for a player on your bench who hadn't really even produced in like 2 months. I know Pablo Sandoval got out to the hot start pinch hitting, but he wasn't even playing by the time Atlanta traded him. Right. I mean, you compare that move to like, you know, some of the moves the Phillies did or did not make. That's anybody could have had Eddie Rosario.
They made dynamic moves at that deadline. That's the reason they are where they are. They saved their season. And, you know, sometimes the save comes in the front office, not just in the ninth inning. And like I said, Anthopoulos deserves to be executive of the year. I just love, you know, Mike Rizzo kind of reminded me of this a few years ago. I love a GM who's aggressive at the deadline, a GM who never stops trying. You know, when you're treading water, he doesn't look at those final 2 months and says, we're not going to get there. He says, I'm going to do whatever the heck I can to get us there. And that's what Anthopoulos did. Dave Dombrowski, to me, brought that same attitude around the trade deadline for the Phillies this season. Because if you remember, just, you know, days before that trade deadline, there was a lot of talk. Are they going to sell or are they going to stay in it? And he was adamant. No, we got a chance to win this division. It might be a long shot, but we're staying in it. And he went out and made moves around the edges that made them better. The moves he made definitely made them better. It didn't make them good enough. They weren't enough of a difference maker, but Gibson was a nice addition. Ian Kennedy certainly had his moments. To me, the big fatal blow for the Phillies, and at that deadline, they were involved with other big names. Don't kid yourself. They really wanted Craig Kimbrel. And I believe, I firmly believe that that was the guy they were going to exceed the luxury tax thresholds for. They just couldn't get that thing done without giving up some of the young pieces that they have. They have very few young pieces that they really like, and they just couldn't part with them. So they were in on Kimbrel. They got two around the edges moves in Kennedy and Gibson, but at least the mindset of Dave Dombrowski was, no, we're staying in this. We're going to give it a try. Alex Anthopoulos had the same mindset. He just did more and did more better, if that makes sense. So, hats off to the Braves there. But I love a GM who keeps on trying and see what happens. And the Braves are a great example of that. And, they're so young and talented. They're going to get Acuna back next year. One thing I think the Braves have something really special brewing here and beyond this season is look at the experience they're gaining. Look at the quality of being battle tested that those young players and even mid-career players are gaining. That stuff, that's intangible that you can't teach. That's intangible that you can only experience, and that can help them down the road. I mean, they can't get full bellies. You can't get satisfied. But take that experience and channel it the right way, and that makes you really, really dangerous. So that's not a good sign for the rest of the National League East.
No, it's not. And I like the point you brought up about the two managers in this World Series, the two kind of old school guys in Dusty Baker and Brian Snitker. It's funny how cyclical baseball is in terms of managing and front office philosophy. We saw for a long time the trend was to go to the first year manager. And the Padres, for example, their last two managers, Andy Green, Jace Tingler, first time managers, rookie managers, couldn't get the job done. This year, with extremely high expectations for Tingler's team, he gets fired. The Padres hire Bob Melvin, an experienced manager, because they want someone who has more, like the battle testing that you're referring to right now. So it's just funny the way this all goes. You can even apply that to the Phillies front office. You had the Matt Klentak regime. Now you have the Dave Dombrowski regime.
Yeah. And I don't even think it's funny. I think experience means something in really all walks of life. The more you do something, the better you get at it. You have opportunities, you fail, you get weeded out. But the guys who survive and do it a long time, it kind of becomes Darwinian, And the survivors are survivors for a reason. The Dombrowskis of the world. Snicker was, minor league manager for a long time in that system. And I think he's a tremendous leader of that ball club. And to me, there's still Charlie Manuel was a longtime minor league manager. I just think he learned to deal with people and personalities and athletes. And when you have that wealth of experience at the minor league level, and it does help. That's why I think the Padres, with all that talent, made a great move going to Bob Melvin. He is experienced in taking that ship and steering it through rough seas, because every season has rough seas, and it's how you come out of it, and it's how you get to the other side of the wave. An experienced guy knows how to do that. So, it's good to see Dusty Baker, and it's good to see Brian Snitker, two guys with some miles on them, but plenty of miles left. And it's good to see them, receive the attention and the accolades they deserve for the performance that they've provided. But to me, that performance experience is a big reason they perform so well. I mean, Dusty Baker, let's face it, that's a hated team around. You mentioned that map of the U.S. where nobody's rooting for the Astros. He's gone in there and kind of been, it seems like, almost like a father figure, very supportive to these guys. And he's got them out on the other side, and that's important. So great job of leadership by both these guys. It's not all X's and O's. It's not all knowing when to go to the bullpen. It's about handling guys, knowing your cast of characters, knowing your people, how to get the best out of them, when to lean on them, when to kick them in the butt, when to give them a hug. It's baseball season is like no other season. It's You know, it's 162 games plus 30. There's 30 in spring training. And if you're a good team, you got another month in October. You're in each other's face all the time. You're around each other all the time. You know, a great manager of people and a leader of men, I still believe is the most important quality of a manager. And obviously Dusty Baker has it because teams, you know, keep hiring him. And obviously Brian Snicker has it. Dusty, you know, earned it by managing a lot of big league teams, earned that experience, gained that experience. Snicker did it in the Braves by running a lot of minor league teams and getting his chance at the big league level and delivering. Guys, players play for these guys. And we've both seen it when players don't play for a manager, roll over on them. It's not a good thing, but it's not a pretty look. Both these teams play for these guys. So, yeah, it's great to see. You know, I hate to go back to this word, but it's great to see some of these old school experienced guys who really know what they're doing, you know, be in the spotlight like this. So hats off to both guys.
Hey, doubling back to the Craig Kimbrel comment you made, just wondering, you know, Craig Kimbrel's going to be available again this offseason. He was traded from the Cubs to the White Sox at the deadline, and things did not go well for Kimbrel with the White Sox. He was moved to the eighth inning. He had never in his career pitched the eighth inning, and he struggled the final 2 months of the regular season into the playoffs, gave up a lot of home runs. There was a report early after the White Sox were eliminated that they were looking to trade him this offseason. He has a $15 million club option that they would, I guess, pick up and then try to shop him. And I guess the thinking is that the relief market is really thin. You have Raisel Iglesias and maybe Kenley Jansen at the top of the closing market, and everything after that is like the Ian Kennedy tier of reliever. Do you think the Phillies would still hold enough interest in Kimbrel to go after him, or might they be scared off of what happened with the White Sox?
I'm glad you doubled back on that trade deadline, because there was one more point I wanted to make when I was talking about Dombrowski having that attitude of, you know, let's stay in this, let's give it a try. And he made moves around the edges with Kennedy and Gibson. They obviously did not get Kimbrel, who I believe they were pretty hot for. I wanted to make the point that I don't think not doing enough of the trade deadline was the Phillies' fatal flaw. Losing Rhys Hoskins and losing Zach Gaflin, to me, were just huge blows down the stretch. But moving forward to your point on Kimbrel and whether the Phillies will be in on him this winter, I think Dombrowski's going to be in on everything. I think he's that type of guy. I think he's that type of aggressive executive, and I think they'd be foolish not to be in on everything, because they need to inch this thing, or maybe not even inch it, moving forward significantly, because they need to break this postseason drought. It's at 10 years. It's really a bad thing. You can't have this. And, you know, that's his complete mission, is to get this team to the postseason while you still got Bryce Harper and Zach Wheeler and, you know, Aaron Nola, Rhys Hoskins, while you still got guys with tread on their tire. You got to get this team to the postseason. So, yeah, I think he's going to be open-minded to a guy like Kimbrel. Why wouldn't he? Brought him into Boston, tried to get him at the break this year or at the deadline this summer. And, you know, I don't profess to have any inside knowledge, but, you know, my educated guess is absolutely he's going to be in on Craig Kimbrel. Absolutely. And does his performance with the White Sox concern me or them? Absolutely. Anytime a guy doesn't perform well, it has to be a concern. You have to dig into it and find out why, see if he becomes a deal breaker for you. But, yeah, I think the Phillies will be in on Craig Kimbrel. Dombrowski and his season ender mentioned closer as an area of need. And I totally agree with him. It would be great to have someone to come out of that bullpen that doesn't, you know, make you feel like, oh boy, this is going to be an adventure. I think the right situation, you know, Kimbrel wasn't closing all the time in Chicago and with the White Sox. Maybe that had something to do with it. But if I were to give you an educated guess, absolutely. He has a history with the guy. The guy's a top-notch closer when he's right. I think it would be absolutely worth a shot, depending upon what the White Sox are looking for, depending upon what that's a good-sized salary and what it does to the other moves you could make. But we don't know where the luxury tax threshold is going to be in the next CBA. We don't even know how busy this winter is going to be with the CBA expiring. It could be a mad dash early. It could be a mad dash late. Who knows? But having watched Dave Dombrowski for a long time and putting that together, his MO together with what the Phillies need. Yeah. And the fact that the Phillies, I think, showed their hand at the trade deadline, they wanted him pretty badly. I think they're going to be in it for Craig Kimbrel, but we'll see.
Do you think if the Phillies knew definitively at the trade deadline that Reese Hoskins and Zach Eflin were done for the season, that they would have sold or would have been more aggressive in buying? Hoskins played only 7 games after the deadline.
Possibly. I mean, I think that could have shifted their thinking, but, you know, who knows? I mentioned I thought Dombrowski was like, you know, we're right here, we're treading water, we're going to stay in it and try to win. Maybe losing, not having those two guys changes his thinking. Certainly plausible. I don't know that the definite answer to that, though.
Well, free agency opens 5 days after the World Series ends, so that process will be approaching quickly. As Jim mentioned, though, this could be a slow offseason with the collective bargaining agreement uncertainty. But over at NBCSportsPhiladelphia.com and here on the Phillies Talk podcast, we're going to begin breaking down individual free agents who would fit the Phillies, why they would fit the Phillies, making the case and looking at, you know, whether a pursuit is realistic. So stay tuned for all that, both on NBCSportsPhiladelphia.com and here on the Phillies Talk podcast. Thanks a lot for listening. Have a great weekend, everybody.